Chapter 11. After leaving Mill Corner, Laura Archer had gone directly to Greenborough Police Station to help assess a prisoner in custody, a woman who was exhibiting signs of mental distress. It hadn't taken her long to discover that the whole thing was a scam. It was around 10:30 when she finally got to her consulting room. The place was no longer home. It was just where she worked. She belonged at Mill Corner now. It gave her a comfortable feeling. She went first to her apartment to check everything was okay. She hadn't been in for several days and was wondering if she'd left any milk in the fridge. Her consulting rooms on the ground floor were completely self-contained with a tiny galley kitchenette and a separate toilet. She wondered whether she should rent the flat out. It was well cared for and modern and in a good location, so it could fetch top money. But would she be pushing Jackman into committing himself when he might not be ready? She didn't want to tempt fate, then find herself with nowhere to go. "Don't rush things, Laura," she whispered, and then laughed. Ever the counsellor. The key to her consulting room door refused to turn. She pulled it out and looked at it. Yes, it was the right one. She tried again, and this time it worked. "Must get that oiled," she muttered, opening the inner door to her office. Her main consulting room was designed to foster a sense of calm. It smelled of aromatherapy oils and had a clever colour-change system of lighting that relaxed the mind. Her desk was in one corner of the room, the centre of which was occupied by two comfortable leather recliners, and this was where she conducted her sessions with her clients. Laura went to her desk to get the case file that she required, then stopped mid-stride. In the centre of the desk, in a china pot, was a pure white orchid. "Jackman. What a lovely thought," she murmured, smiling. He was the only other person with a key, so it had to be him. Then she saw the card and opened it eagerly. "My dear Laura, such a lovely room. I'm in awe. Go to your computer and open videos, and I'll tell you more. Alistair." Laura saw that her hand was shaking. She dropped the card as if it were covered in acid and stared at it. "Alistair Ashcroft. Here." She pulled her phone from her pocket, found Jackman's number, then she cancelled the call. Hesitantly, she lifted the lid of her laptop. Before she touched the keys, she looked closely. The whole thing had been carefully wiped with an astringent-smelling cleanser. It looked as good as new. She switched it on and waited for it to load. She needed to see this before she spoke to Jackman. She clicked videos, and a new MOV file was waiting for her. Laura swallowed. "Here goes." A man was seated in a high-backed chair, his face in shadow. Laura adjusted the volume and listened. "Laura Archer, I really must congratulate you. You have a wonderful room. I've been in many consulting rooms in my time, but yours..." Alistair Ashcroft gave a small, controlled laugh. "Even I might be persuaded to share some of my secrets with you in a room such as this. I am sorry that we aren't speaking face to face, but maybe another time. Yes, another time. Very soon. We will talk frankly." He shifted slightly, and light caught the arm of the chair he was sitting on. Laura paused the footage and stared at the image frozen on the screen. It was her chair. He was filming this right here in her room. She was overcome with fear and outrage. The mere thought that he had been here contaminating her sanctuary made her want to vomit. She started the video again, forcing herself to listen to his insidious voice. "Now I know you will be itching to ring Jackman and tell him about this, but perhaps you might reconsider. You're an intelligent woman and will know more than anyone, except possibly Marie Evans, just how what is happening has affected him. You will think, do I want to be the one to cause him to fall apart? If he knows for certain that you're being watched by Alistair Ashcroft, it will send him into free fall. Do you want to do that to the man you love? He shifted again. The darkness hid his face, but he was gloating. I'm right, am I not? He is suffering, Laura. Last night, for instance, standing there by the old mill tower, brooding and troubled, a dark silhouette against the even darker night sky. Laura's mouth went dry. She paused the video again. He'd been out there, watching Jackman. He could have killed him. And had he been there when Jackman left to go to the shooting incident and she was alone? Her legs trembled, grew weak. She sank into her office chair and stared in horror at the screen. Where was this going? Now, if I'd been that sniper he is chasing, he would have been right in the crosshairs, wouldn't he? He really shouldn't make himself into a target like that. He stopped. Enough of this. Enjoy your orchid. We'll meet properly when things are less hectic. And, Laura, do think carefully. Won't you? The screen went black. Laura closed her eyes and exhaled. Ashcroft was right. Her initial reaction had been to tell Jackman and show him the video, get a socko in and dust the whole office and especially that lock. But could she do it? She remembered that nightmare. Jackman hadn't needed to tell her that it visited him regularly. He saw Marie die in front of him probably several times a day. Then there was the stress he was under, his constant anxiety about the people he loved and cared for. He knew that all those connected to him were in immediate danger until he could catch and incarcerate Ashcroft. Where Ashcroft was concerned, Jackman was as vulnerable as a child. The competent and compassionate psychotherapist was suddenly at a loss. She took hold of the china pot with the orchid in it and hurled it against the wall and howled in rage.
Thought I'd ring in person, just in case you were missing my sparkling wit and mordant humour, Rory said.
Marie smiled.
Who is this, please?
She replied, trying to sound officious.
Titania, Queen of the Fairies.
Thought so, Marie chuckled.
So, what have you got for us, Prof?
I have absolutely nothing, dear heart, but my very able assistant has worked out where the sniper was and some information on the gun and ammunition. I shall hand you over to him forthwith.
The spike who took the phone sounded very different to the funky, spiky-haired young mortuary assistant who'd gone to work with Rory all that time ago. Seemed Rory had been right to keep him on. Sergeant Evans, there are identical marks on the casings of the bullets, which confirms that it was the same gun that fired the shot at Christopher Keyes. But as I suspected from the damage done to Arthur Barnes, he used a different bullet, a hollow point, often referred to as a dum-dum.
Why would he do that? Asked Marie.
They are mainly used for their stopping power. They expand on impact, hence the bigger wound, but because they slow down as they travel through soft tissue, they are less likely to pass through the target and hit something or someone else. Spike paused. But I think he used it because it's pretty lethal.
Rory said you've calculated the location of the shooter, Marie said.
Once we had daylight, it was simple, Spike said confidently. He had taken up position on the footbridge over the drain. It's rarely used, as the land on the other side of the water is fenced off. They're about to begin a new housing project. It gave him the height and a perfect view of the old storeroom. I took a telescopic lens over there and looked for myself, and it was a clear line of sight.
And the sockos have gone over the spot, I assume?
Thoroughly, but nothing was found. It seems he's very careful, Spike said.
Isn't he just?
Murmured Marie.
Thank you, Spike.
The Prof wants another word, Sergeant.
Rory was speaking again.
Dum-dums, you're dying to ask why they're called that, are you not? And don't lie now, I know you are.
You got me, I admit it. As far as I'm concerned, it's one of life's great mysteries. Go on, Rory, educate me.
Because the inventor, Lieutenant Colonel Neville Snade Bertie Clay, was the superintendent of the British Arsenal at Dumdum in Bengal, and that's where they were first produced. Now, isn't that interesting?
Riveting. You have made my day, Rory. Now, please, can I go and catch some bad guys?
That's what they pay you for. Off you toddle, dear lady. Ta-ta for now.
Marie had worked with numerous pathologists in her time. Some talked down to you. Some seemed to speak another language, it was so technical. And others were plain creepy. Some never talked at all. Rory Wilkinson and his humour were a panacea for the sorrow, the horror of death. Apart from which, he was the best pathologist she'd ever come across.
Marie, got a minute, please?
Jackman beckoned her into his office. Inside, she found Charlie Button already there. Charlie has a lead on the diesel theft, and considering it wasn't a textbook heist to say the least, we are thinking that it could be linked to Robbie's pig-stealing gang. Jackman flopped down into his captain's chair.
Both efforts were rough around the edges, to say the least.
As was the gun theft, added Marie, remembering the axed-off door lock and the shattered gun cabinet.
Could it be the same gang?
Jackman shrugged. I wouldn't rule it out. Those guys were heavy-handed in the extreme.
Marie looked at Charlie.
Anyone we know in the spotlight?
Well, I've made a few discreet inquiries. This lot aren't known to us, but they are an odd bunch.
Charlie looked at her.
An old Fenn family, name of Lorimer.
Marie laughed.
Lorimer? Rachel Lorimer's boys?
Oh, my. Now, if anyone was going to embark on a life of crime and balls it up, it would be the Lorimers. Jackman and Charlie glanced at each other.
You seem to know them rather well, Jackman said.
My dad knew the grandfather, Caleb Lorimer. He was a blacksmith and a farrier, and he used to make all sorts of stuff in metal, wrought iron and the like. He was a talented man, but uneducated. They hailed from right out on Hawker's Fen, miles from anywhere.
That's right, Hawker's Fen,
Charlie nodded.
Not somewhere I've ever been.
Very few have, said Marie. It's at the bottom of a long straight drove that goes on for miles and miles and ends nowhere. The only place close to it is Thatcher's Fen village, and all that has is a church and a village hall. No other amenities at all.
Other family trouble? Asked Jackman.
Not trouble in the criminal sense, other than poaching and generally doing things their way. Marie tried to remember their names.
Rachel was Caleb's eldest daughter. She married a second cousin and has four sons and one daughter. All have biblical names.
Jackman grinned. Please don't tell me they are Matthew, Mark, Luke and John.
This was another Jackman, a relaxed and almost chirpy one. It was rather disconcerting, but it was a hell of a lot better than the other version.
I remember one was called Noah, and another Levi, but I don't recall the rest.
And every one of Caleb's grandchildren had a disability of one sort or another, mainly learning difficulties. The tiny village school couldn't cope with the disruption they caused, and getting them to a bigger school wasn't possible because they had been barred from using the school bus, so they lost out completely on an education.
Marie could hear her father now. That poor Caleb had his work cut out with his children, all bar Rachel. She's got her head screwed on by the others. The original wild bunch. God help us if they ever have kids of their own.
And, of course, they did.
I was about to send Charlie, Jackman said. Since you have some knowledge of the family, Marie, would you go with him?
Sure, at least I know where they live. No offence, Charlie, but you could be driving around until nightfall looking for their place.
She turned to Jackman.
Should we go now?
Absolutely. If we can dig up something to work on and get this small stuff cleared, then we'll be free to concentrate on the serious issues.
Ah, talking of serious issues, boss.
Marie quickly filled him in on what Spike had told her, omitting Rory's contribution.
Okay, well, I've pulled in a couple of pool detectives to help out with following up the gun club members and any other locals with firearms licenses. I'll keep them beavering away on that while you try to get us a lead on these botched jobs, all right?
Marie threw Charlie an amused smile.
Okay, Button, prepare to meet the Fenlands' answer to Shameless.
Sounds interesting.
That's one way of putting it. They left Jackman's office and made their way down to pick up the keys to a CID car.
Sarge, is it all right with you if we take Kevin Stoner with us?
To tell you the truth, it was him that found this lead for me, and he said he'd like to get a look at the Lorimers. He's never come across the family before, and he's quite interested.
So that was what Kevin had been talking to his snout William about. I would say no problem, but I don't want to put Rachel Lorimer on the defensive by bringing a big crowd. She can be very protective of her boys, and I'm not sure how she'll react to seeing a police uniform.
No worries, Sarge. I'll just tell him that before we go, if that's okay, Charlie asked.
Oh, damn it, let him come, Charlie. Rachel Lorimer will at least take us seriously if there's a uniform with us, and it could scare one of her boys into giving something away. Go and see if he's free while I get hold of a vehicle. I'll see you in the car park.